Crumb.
Alright, 5, 4, 3, 2. Welcome back, everybody, to the Savage Crumbcast. We are in season the 16, episode the 3rd. We're talking about the Winter Players, the front half.
The beginning.
Yep. By one Tanith Lee. That's what we're getting into. I hope you guys dug the front end of the story. It's a little bit different from our last joint that we talked about. But a little bit the same. Mm-hmm. There's some cool vibes. Mm-hmm. Lots of colors in the titles of the chapters. Broad strokes of the paintbrush. Trying to evoke some artistic terminology as I talk about things here. I love this story. I hope you guys do too.
That's all
I can say. I don't want to spoil anything too much. Let's talk about that. You guys want to?
Mm-hmm.
You forgot my name?
No.
You think everybody else did?
Yeah.
That's listening? Well, I'm Luke.
I'm Jonathan.
I remain Joshua.
Yeah, and the three of us are the Crumbcast, and we're hopping into some hot stuff. What are we drinking here, guys? What do you got going?
I've got a High Life that you loaned me that I'm not going to give back.
Yeah.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
Not in the form it was given, at least.
I'm drinking a High Life as well. John is electing to just sip the H2O.
Yeah, drinking seawater makes me feel one with... Oave.
Some salted.
Yes.
Some salted water.
Yeah, just like my ancestors.
Suave Oave.
a man of the ocean.
That's right. Hot lobster.
Climbing. <Right on. laughs> It's a good weather for climbing.
So we're drinking some beers. That's all we got going tonight. Some Miller High Life's, champagnes of beers.
Low key evening.
It is pretty low key. We're at the end of the summer, the beginning of the fall. That's kind of the avenue that we're moving towards here. I think it's appropriate to celebrate with a little bit of a champagne, but nothing too crazy.
Not too crazy. No.
Subdued. That's what we're drinking. Let's move on to one thing. So, how do we want to do this? I know, John, you said early on you were struggling coming up with one thing.
I can be on the spot if you're going to pick me first.
Johnny on the spot?
I'm gonna give you a point there, Johnny. Come on, Johnny. I know. John doesn't like Johnny.
It doesn't offend me. It's just not what my mama named me.
No. Well, John with the J-O to the N is like, it's a different thing than
that's
like,
true.
Johnny Ringo, Johnny 99, like...
Johnny Storm.
It's a different thing.
Yeah.
Yeah. Jonathan. Formally. Sir.
Yes,
what is your one thing?
My one thing, I know I've already done it recently in a podcast, but it is the thing that I am thinking the most about.
No, do it.
Okay.
Better do it
Call
hard. Saul.
Is it Better Call
Saul? It's Better Call Saul. We watched the penultimate episode recently, and all I've done is think about it. I haven't gotten to watch the finale yet. I'm very excited.
You haven't seen it,
though. I haven't seen it. I've tried to stay off of the internet for the most part, except for like work corners. It's so amazing. Like, it really is going to wrap up, I think, in just a beautiful way. I don't want to say anything about what I've seen because I know some of us are still reeling their way through the backlog as well.
Yeah.
Because there was there a couple of years between the last season and this season?
Like a full two, something like that, yeah.
So I understand wanting to go back and reacquaint yourself with all of the material for sure. I kind of wish that I had done the exact same thing, but it's just, it's so good. Like, you expect it to be good, right? It's Vince Gilligan and Peter Gold. Like, you know what they can do, but it's just everything they learned with Breaking Bad seems to be on full display with this. And the noir elements are just rip your heart out good. So I can't wait to see what happens in the actual finale.
Nice, man.
And then I'm going to watch the sequel, Breaking Bad.
So we were talking a little bit off mic right before we started. I did do a full rewatch.
Yeah.
Up to whatever this last season is. Is it season 6?
That's the one they're on now, yeah.
So there's part 1 and part 2 of season 6. Mm-hmm. And AMC Plus or AMC Butthole, whatever their name is, I can't remember. But whatever it is, if you try to subscribe to AMC Butthole, they won't let you access the first half of the 6th season.
It's a bad move on their
part. And I was caught up, yeah. Imposed, like, with a week and a half to motor through the front half of season 6 and then be ready to hit season 2, the back half of season 6, whatever it is.
Right.
And AMC the Butthole didn't work. So I have not watched any of the new season. I totally did a rewatch. I sort of condensed it. Watched probably 1.5 to 2 episodes a week. That was my goal, something like that. Nice. So I was a little bit behind what my original schedule was, and I still haven't watched any of the new season, but it's because of AMC The Butthole.
I can try to act it out for you.
Don't. I'm going to steal it. I don't want to say anything more than just like I tried to legitimately subscribe to it legally, and it kills me with these half season structures,
right.
that there's not some mechanism to make it available. Maybe at the time of this recording, there's going to be something else.
Maybe.
But the only option for me as of right now was to pay a $2.99, right, on Amazon Prime per episode for the new season. So
I will say, I don't think that the Better Call Saul
crew, I love it, yeah.
crew, they didn't advocate for the mid-season break. In fact, I'd read one interview where they said that they really thought that it kind of messed with the flow of what they were doing. And I think that the only reason it really happened is because AMC decided so, and there was an ability to do so because of Odenkirk's heart attack, mm-hmm, that he had.
Right.
I don't know if that factored in at all, but it sounds like it wasn't really fully their decision to do so.
Okay.
But
dude, I'm so stoked. I want to watch it, and I want to talk about it with you. And you want to watch the last episode.
I do.
And I know you want to talk about it too. So yeah. I'm just going to do it. I'm going to find it.
Can I ask, with your rewatch, was there an episode that, looking back, you're now like, yeah, that's...
Holy shoot.
what the what?
What's the Ermintrout backstories and all of the establishment of the bunker building,
uh-huh,
is just that much more powerful.
Yeah.
It's so insanely powerful. I will also say that the last couple episodes of season 5, mm-hmm, they didn't fall flat, but they weren't necessarily like a huge climax for me.
Oh,
like,
yeah,
a lot,
yeah,
of the cartel guns and squads stuff, right, that plays out in the very, like, that is very high tension, but rewatching it, I was like, oh yeah, I kind of forgot that this is how things absolutely sort of wrapped up.
And
so
Kim breaks bad right at the end of that one.
Yes.
Right.
Yeah. So there's stakes and there's cool bad guys that are on display, but it didn't necessarily hit the gravity of things. Like, I don't know. It's so great. Like Nacho and Gus and all of the machinations that Mike just gets wrapped into. Damn it, Mike. He's like the most damned,
right,
old man of a show.
Someday there'll be a prequel for him.
I hope. And it's, and of course, Banks, it's going to be him playing, yeah, himself as a 20-year-old. Yeah. It's magic. Yeah.
All right. That was my turn.
I like it.
So I need to watch this show.
Yeah.
Someday, yeah, I guess. This is the same thing that happened with Breaking Bad, if you guys remember.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know why. I didn't watch it. And then suddenly I just
mowed through
did,
it.
Did, but you guys had stopped talking about it, so I was on my own.
That's not true.
It's not true.
We're here.
We're here. Companions
we're
on the
ready
road.
Ready to believe.
We're the winter players.
That's true.
Yeah. The Albuquerque players.
Luke keeps the shrine of Breaking Bad.
Yeah.
It's the finger bone of Brian Cranston.
The Eye of Cranston does sound like a D&D relic. Man, so Ashley and I have been watching this half-hour long series of different comedy specials on Netflix called The Stand-Ups. Are you familiar with it at all? Mm-hmm. It's good. 30-minute long sets by some people that I had never heard of and some people that I had seen before. There was at least one SNL cast member. Her name's Melissa Villaseñor, and just a handful of random stand-up comedians. And it spans from 2019 up through last year. And so it's a good run of like pre-COVID and post-COVID from kind of times. And like, yeah. And you can kind of see what we were joking about beforehand, right. You know, it's pretty good. And a whole bunch of different styles and techniques, I guess, are on display. Very, very good. But one of my favorites is actually in season one. This guy's name is Dion Cole. He gets up there and he says, I'm just going to practice some jokes right now. And he gets his notebook out and he uses it as a prop, uh-huh. like as a punchline indicator, as Mitch Hedberg would say.
Right.
Uh-huh. And sometimes he would say something and it would kind of fall flat, but then he would just kind of like look at his notebook and you know, like scratch it out or like circle it or
that's
something.
That's awesome.
and that part, to me at least, that hit. I thought that was pretty funny. But anyway, if you are looking for something to put on while you're, you know, making dinner, you know, whatever chore you're doing, and you want to have something on in the background, this is pretty good. And the first season is 6 episodes, and I think they get progressively longer. Season 2. Like 3, so, nope, that's 6 again. I'm wrong. I thought one of these seasons was a lot longer, but nope, they're all just 6 episodes. So 18 episodes of stand-up comedians
of laughter,
giving it their all. Yeah, it's good. Some of them we skipped. We would watch a little bit and we kind of skipped past it. So we'll come back, circle around because we weren't feeling it. You know, Ashley, as you guys know, not a big fan of gross body humor and stuff like that, but. You know, I like a good dirty joke. So
yeah.
So you know, I'll watch it again sometime. But yeah, this was a big hit for us. The Stand-Ups on Netflix.
Check it out. Have a giggle.
Have a giggle. Have a laugh.
Giggle or three.
Have some laughs.
Round us out, boss.
So
Your notes.
My notes. It's okay. I've committed them to memory.
Okay.
My high life is for anybody that's not watching. I don't know why you'd be watching unless you were named John or Josh, but the high life, the head foam, the craggy beer foam has spilled over onto my Tanithly notes.
Just imagine if we started a Patreon, this is the kind of stuff that you could watch.
Right. Yeah.
Pay $5 to watch us spill beer.
We can start filming it and putting it on YouTube if you want.
Right. Whatever. This would be a good YouTube. This is, well, you know what? It's like, fuck. Oh, sorry.
They're going to clean your
We're like, off YouTube
it's,
now.
It's like a legal pad document. And they kind of pissed me off that it didn't fit into my little like notebook that Josh gave me,
the
little diary tome. So it's fine. I know my notes.
Okay.
About Tanith. So.
But you had a thing.
You panicked about Tanith?
I panicked about it. beer stained literature notes over there.
I kind of like it. Looks tough. I may keep it. I'm gonna put it up. I'm going to dry it.
I can't take you seriously with the foam stash.
the foam on my stash. I haven't. Oh, I trimmed down the stash and the.
No, your whole beard is looking quite nice.
It's luxuriant,
getting,
man.
It's getting wiry. I'm not good at a.
Again, pay $5 on Patreon.
I'm not good at a luxurious beard. I just have good, wiry, bristly beard.
That's a good beard.
It's pretty thick.
It is thick. It's just not. I don't know. I need more product in it, I think.
Okay.
It's probably the thing. Anyway, my Chromecast one thing.
Beard oil.
My one thing is an extension of my last one thing, which last time around I was reading The Horus Heresy, which is a seminal Warhammer 40K novel trilogy, and I have been sucked into the void, into the into the other side, guys.
And you bought a Warhammer.
You did a thing, yeah.
I bought a Warhammer.
Bought a Warhammer.
I bought the Warhammer, and not only did I buy one Warhammer, I bought 40K of them. Wow. I bought 40K Warhammers.
Really, no. I specialize in two-handed wielding.
Dude, they have chain swords, Space Marines.
Yeah.
They have, like, you know, it's like Ash with, like, a chainsaw.
Right.
Only it's a sword, but with a chain. And so it's awesome. I didn't want to go whole hog into, like, legit Warhammer 40K. I looked around. It seemed too cool. I've never, like, done any painting of miniatures. Have you guys ever messed with that before?
No, I haven't. It seems, you and I were talking about this the other day, and it does seem like something that if you needed an activity to just chill out to, listen to some records and you know, just relax, that would be a good hobby.
Yeah. And I've always really, like, been enamored with miniatures. Of course, like, as a high schooler with playing D&D and stuff, I had, like, pewter miniatures, like the Ral Partha D&D miniatures and that kind of stuff. I had a handful of those. We didn't ever use them on the table. They were just, like, cool little trinkets that we had. And I was always, like, intrigued by Warhammer. And I don't know. I started reading the Space Marine stuff and all of the craziness. And I just got caught up in the moment. And I said, well, whatever. It's the starter set for this game called Kill Team is $100. You can get paints for, like, $50. Whatevs. So I've jumped into it, and it's fun. There's a lot there's a lot to digest. So I'm not saying I'm a total Warhammer 40K, like, aficionado at this point in time, because I'm not. I have no intentions of ever going that hardcore. I know that's what everybody says, is like,
I can quit when I want.
I can say no, but the whole conceit of the game Kill Team is it's like the skirmish equivalent, where rather than having like a 2,000 point army or whatever you're doing, I don't even know, like a lot of dudes on the battle mat, like a 4x6 foot or terrain. Yeah. I don't have space for that. I don't have a ping pong table in my garage. You know, I got a car in the
covered
garage.
Covered in podcasting.
You know, but I do have 24 inches by 30 inches, which is the skirmish size for the Kill Team.
Okay.
And I did buy the starter set that has, like, Orc Boys and the Death Corps of Krieg. And I can paint them and have fun with them. And then I did buy some Space Marines. Like, a small set, which when I've glued them together and painted them up,
will give me...
They're not painted yet. I've glued them up. Okay. So I now have both... I got to get this right, because Games Workshop is dumb. So I don't have incursors. No, I do. I have incursors and infiltrators, but not intercessors.
There we go.
No, it's all of these I words. Oh. So I don't have intercessors, but you can buy a 10-pack of infiltrators, and you can do them either as infiltrators or incursors. So I've done 5 and 5. Okay. So effectively, I have two more teams. So I have 4 teams that I can Kill Team with.
Okay.
With you guys. Now, I know all of the Kill Team bros on the call are going to say, well, wait, dude, you got to have one more Kill Team bro in your Space Marine crew for a Kill Team crew or something. Like, I know that, like, you can add up a sixth, but it's okay, because I have two five dude squad Space Marine crews. And then, like, some super orc boys, they're going to be just, like, the dopest. My orcs are going to be cool. I'm not going to do boys with a Z. They're going to be the BOIs. Josh and I were texting each other about our boys.
Orc boys.
And then the Death Corps of Krieg are these super weird gas masky, like, World War II.
They look like Fallout.
They,
like,
do. Batman
Who Laughs kind of thing.
So I'm going to paint them. That's going to be my thing. It'll be fun.
I knew this was coming 2 years ago when we played Axis and Allies.
Oh,
I saw the future. And that night, I was like, I think Luke's going to play Warhammer someday.
I'm liking the idea of Warhammer very much. And I will say the Games Workshop spot here in Lexington, Kentucky.
Yeah.
The dude that runs the Games Workshop, he's a cool guy. Good. I went in and I talked to him. I gave him the straight talk. I said, "Hey dude, I'm not going to buy anything today. Just give me the straight stuff.
Give me the dope.
What's the difference between skirmishing with Kill Team versus the bigger thing?" And he talked to me for 30 minutes. And then the next day I showed up and I bought it and I talked to him and the other guy that works at the store for an hour and we just sort of hung out. So I'm excited, like beyond
right.
us fooling around with this. I don't know. It seems like in the post-COVID world, people want to get back to recreational gaming and stuff. And I've mm-hmm. never been somebody to show up to a shop and like play Magic or play D&D or play Warhammer
mm-hmm.
in that kind of arena, but it seems like that's the thing you do with the war games.
Mm-hmm.
So whatever. I mean, even if it doesn't go anywhere, I'm gonna paint some minis, and then if it goes further, that's cool too. And if it dies, whatever. It was a lark in 2022 when right. Luke had his
You were 40K curious.
Yeah, I had my 40K curious phase.
Right.
And then I left it.
Right.
That's it. That was my
I'm excited to see them when they're painted. You need to paint post progress pics on Instagram.
He's got some. Yeah. I don't know if they're on the Instagram yet, but yeah.
I will.
He's clipping them out of the whatever the term is, the frame.
The sprues. Yeah. Sprues. Can I talk about this for two more minutes?
Is dude, okay? go. Yeah.
It and it's blank, and then like you edit it somehow. So like when you do a twist, then it's all done.
Oh, I need to
do like a boomerang video of it.
Yeah. Like a TikTok kind of.
Yeah.
So if you're playing Space Marines, there's like 18 or 20 factions that are the old school Space Marine clans, factions, groups, whatever you want to use. And there's like every one of them has like classic color schemes, right?
Okay. That was a question I was going to ask you off mic.
So if you want to play like the Space Wolves, they're like the Nordic werewolf Space Viking.
Okay.
Space Marines. Everybody loves those, seemingly. The other group are the I'm ruining my Warhammer cred here, but there's basically like a red colored, they're not the Blood Guard, but they're basically like vampiric. They get thirsty for blood, and they are ushered into Valhalla, these bloodthirsty warriors, right?
Okay.
And then there's the Ultramarines, which are very Greek and structured within their fighting, you know, that kind of thing. There's all of these different factions. Okay. They all have their own established color schemes, and you have your bros that are all painted up certain ways. And these are all Space Marines. They look like dudes from Doom, right? Or like Halo, but painted different ways. Or you can just paint whatever you want. And I kind of want to do that.
Yeah, that'd be me.
So I'm like, well, I want to paint something easy. I don't know what to paint. I'm not going to do like 18 different colors. What am I going to do? And so I scrutinized it. And I think the name of like my faction is going to be... This is so cheesy, but I really do think it's like the easiest thing. I'm going to call them the Wayward Sons.
Okay.
Because out of nowhere, I started thinking about Kansas's like Carry On My Wayward Son. I'm like, oh, holy crap. This is like the ragtag group of Space Marines. I don't know what circumstances put them together on some rando like Orc Boy world where they had to end up like fighting for their lives and they banded together and they have this like spray paint job, because I'm going to be a shitty painter, like, right, starting out. Like, my painting's not going to be great, so I think I'm just going to do them all kind of a flat black. I'll do some dry brushing of their edges, and then any, like, sergeants or lieutenants or some shit, I'll just, like, give them a red shoulder or a blue, shoulder.
Yeah.
And that's it. So the Wayward Sons are my... What's the word? Bespoke. they're my bespoke faction.
Right.
So I've really thought about this a lot, but it seems like an easy thing to do.
I'm excited.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I look forward to learning more about it from you.
I mean, you're going to play it at some point. You're going to have a faction of the Wayward Sons that you're going to play against Josh. I'm going to film it. It's a death match between the two of you. Yeah, and my orc boys are going to hop in and be like,
They don't shiv.
They don't.
They're slicer dicers.
Yeah.
Saul Goodman would not do well in the Warhammer universe.
You don't think so?
No.
You don't think so?
Okay. He'd talk his way around a corner.
Kim Wexler would rule that world, though.
She'd wreck it.
Yep.
No, this is good stuff. I'm glad I'm a part of it.
Play us off.
One thing.
All right. Do you guys want to talk about the Winter Players?
Yeah, man.
I do. This is another like novelette or novella or whatever that was initially released as a chapbook, right?
I think so.
It's another one of those.
Look over my notes.
Look over your beer stained, your High Life notes. Correct everything that I'm messing up now. And then later on, it was packaged in this paperback volume, Companions on the Road, Wondrous Tales of Adventure and Quest. And so it's the backup story.
Yep.
Or the headliner?
Do you think it's the headliner?
I don't know. You're right. Companions on the Road is clearly the headliner.
Yeah.
But why did they do that? Why were they first?
I don't know. Alphabetically.
I love on the back of the... I don't know if we've hit it on this, but on the back of at least our Bantam collection, There's the statement of The Ring, The Jewel, The Bone, which is almost the alternative title, right?
Yeah.
It's kind of... There are really great synopses of the two different stories that are presented here. But it is unfortunate that the Winter Players is given a little bit short shrift.
Yeah. And, you know, I guess calling it Companions on the Road and the Winter Players maybe is a little too much, a little too forward. But this story starts strong. This is a strong start to another sword and sorcery tale, one in which we see some sorcery from one of the main characters.
Yep.
Yeah. So... this is cool. I like it a lot. How do you guys want to approach it? Well, let me ask this question and see where it takes us. Do you think that this story is set in the same world as Companions on the Road?
I think it well could be. Okay. And when I first read it, I didn't realize that there was a larger world. But when looking across some of the various Blackgate articles about Tanith Lee, I saw some... various references to all of her works. And I do suspect that there's some level of like shared world story that's going on here. So I think that at least the characters in Companions on the Road may be a recurring cast. I'm hard pressed to actually kind of like recall exactly what that overlaps with. And if you go to ISFDB or something like that, you're not going to see, I don't think the Companions on the Road, like, umbrellaed under some larger story structure or like linkage of stories. I don't think that's the case.
No Hyborian Age.
I don't think so, but I get the feel though that like this kind of thing could be dropped into to our story. When I say this kind of thing, the new story, the Winter Players, it very much seems compatible with the world of Companions on the Road, only maybe just to like the far north where it's cold, right? And it's wintry and it's ocean stuff, and the ravages of war and civilization haven't yet touched on that part of the continent, right? Yeah. Like, do you guys agree? Do you feel like it could work?
I didn't think of it as the same world just because it does seem like it's such a different place, but the more we talk about it and unspool it, the more it feels like, if anything, we were perhaps on continental Europe and Companions on the Road, where there's wars raging and big empires and stuff. If this is in that same world, to me, it has to almost be like in the British Isles, separated from that other world.
Uh-huh.
I felt like this was a very Irish story the whole time I was reading it. I don't know about you, Josh. I know you've also been to Ireland, but some of the descriptions of things that she sees, I was sort of transported back to parts of like the Baron in Ireland, and seeing like that alien landscape of folding rocks kind of fold out in front of you like a thunder cloud, basically, full of all these little purple flowers and microcosms. It feels like she kind of traverses through some of that. So I guess I could definitely be swayed into thinking that this is a British story, whereas the last one was like continental France or Germany or something.
Mm-hmm. Cool.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Not to make it more Howardian. I know we talked a lot in the first season about Howard using real life analogs for his Hyborian Age countries,
but yeah.
I'm not trying to make that comparison.
Well, and it's not a one for one, but like there's some ocean magic here, right?
Right.
And if you've ever been to like Western Ireland or seen pictures of the cliffs of Moher, like
yes.
Yeah. So yeah. It's a giant stark kind of landscape. And moving inland from there you get to the Burren, as John said, and I can totally see it. And it feels kind of pagan or neo-pagan. Like,
yes.
At least the rituals and the relics and things like that.
I agree with that for sure.
So I like that. I like the idea of this transpiring in the same world, but different continents and different religions and different, maybe even magical traditions and things like that. The only magic we saw, well, that's not true. We saw the sister do some cool magic, right? But the rest of it was all necromancy. Like it was black magic,
right?
Most foul. And now we see some weird arcane elemental magic from how are we saying the character's name? I pronounced it Wave, but I like Luke's version of it better.
Oave.
Yeah, I said Oave. Yeah, I mean, I think there's a lot of magic in this.
Mm-hmm.
Her and Gray and Nitwus. I mean, this is a magically charged story, and to me, it's the best way to handle magic. It is alien, but yet there's enough like functionality to it that you get the job done. Like you know exactly kind of the spells that are being conveyed, but you have no understanding of the mechanisms. And honestly, Oave or Wave, she has no strong explanation that she can offer, right? It's some stuff that was in a book that she kind of picked up on, and mm-hmm. it's hard to convey.
Yeah.
Like, I'm going to make an elemental shield. I'm going to lay a shadow trap. Like,
I can tell things to remember what happened before and do it again. Or I can tell this door not to open.
Yeah. So the magic here kind of does remind me of Le Guin and Wizard of Earthsea.
Mm-hmm.
What about the... So this jumped out at me last night as I was reading, and I wanted to read it to you guys and see what you think. On page 110, about halfway down the page, it says... So he is asking about the relics. And he needs the bone, right? This is a visitor to the shrine who, at this point, I think has no name or has not told his name yet. And he says he needs one thing, and that is a fragment of bone. Only the bone can give me peace. Bone is capitalized. What do you mean? She asked, to see how he would go on. The relic, the thing of the shrine. You must be acquainted with it, lady. In far lands, they call this the house of the bone. That is what I was sent to find. So two things here. One, the relic is capitalized, right? And thing, the word thing is capitalized. And I was gripped by that word thing and the capitalization of it. What is it about that word? Like, I don't know if it has the same power for you guys, but it's like a utility word. It's an all-purpose word,
mm-hmm.
right? This thing, that thing, like anything could be a thing. But in this case, it's a capital T thing. And if I understand correctly, this is a like Norse word thing.
All thing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So did that notion of a capital T thing and the capitalized names of the relics, did that give you guys pause? Did it kind of kickstart your imaginations?
Yeah, it to me it conveys some. I mean, it conveys the level of importance.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't necessarily pick up on the Norse angle. So what's a little bit of what that? So what's the all thing?
The all thing is like the governing body. Like you can get elected to the thing, and
it's like a position.
Yeah. It's like it's a Congress or a Senate sort of situation.
Okay.
Yeah. And then you would convene the thing to to hold votes.
This is like, this is Norse mythology, not Marvel Comics Norse mythology.
No, this is like Norse government.
Okay. Society. I said mythology, but
Sorry. Yeah. So it's an entity. Is that the other term that we might use there?
Right, mm-hmm. The governing body.
Okay. And it's made up, like it's more than the sum of its parts, maybe.
Yeah, it's feudal, but less feudal than what you may be used to, like if you were thinking about feudal France or feudal Germany, where people can come and go as part of it. Like you swear fealty to a lord, but like you have a vote, sort of. You get input in things in a way that you don't necessarily in other societies. I don't want to make it sound fully democratic.
Yeah, it's not really a representational democracy, right?
Yeah.
But it's it's a weird remix of that plus like a feudal...
Yes.
You know, Jarl and House Carls and all of that stuff.
Okay.
I hope we have some anthropology listeners that are like, well, actually.
It's more like, and I would love, I would relish that. But this is my limited understanding of it. And so we don't use this word in the same way. We use it as a multipurpose word, as a name for perhaps items that we don't have any other name for, like what's this thing, or a catch-all for all of your belongings. So gather your things,
right?
And I guess it just made me wonder about the ring, the bone, and the is it the jewel, the gem? Why are they capitalized? Why are they so? Holy, like
yeah, they're religious,
right?
It's the beauty of the magic. I think that's the power that Tanith Lee conveys with her system that we have a wave or a wave that's kind of born into this caste, if you will. Like she's clearly different than other young women within the fishing community, and she becomes a magic woman, and she lays in with that like religious group, and she's not given full explanations of what those three holy relics represent.
Mm-hmm.
They're protecting them. They're stashed away in a box behind a hole in the ground or whatever. Like they're down there.
A door that you can't open except for magically.
And that's the kind of thing that seems lived in.
Mm-hmm.
And I know I mentioned this last recording, but I think that this is the kind of thing that like Martin tapped into with the early volumes of A Song of Ice and Fire. There's just enough window dressing that everything seems lived in.
Mm-hmm.
Like we don't know the status or the consequence of these relics.
Mm-hmm.
We don't know how Gray can bust up into and breach access to these relics, but he can.
Mm-hmm.
And Uave's like watching over these things, and it just seems real. There's just enough story to make everything make absolute sense, but to leave you just asking questions of but why. And I think to tie it to Martin, that's the thing I say, well, that's what he did so well in those early volumes of that series. And this story is just so powerful on that front. It's big in its scope, it's mythic. There's very narrow consequences for just a couple characters, which I think is cool. Like it's this huge scope of like two different characters on a road trip, as it were. That's kind of what's unspooling here. But yet it's just like the two of them having conversations a few different times. And it's this type of larger mythology that we don't totally understand, but totally seems real.
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
Absolutely. I think that what Tanith Lee is tapping into and what you're pointing out is like, this is all very familiar to anybody that's been to church, right? Like you don't necessarily know anything about what you're praying to. Like you know, you think you do, and you think you know about the powers or whatever it is that you're tapping into, but you don't. You don't really know what that means. Everything is, they're tools. They're tools to have mass, to have church. to do the things that you need to do, the rituals to like go through the whole process.
So like a censor.
Yes, exactly. And what I think you were hinting at that I'm really into and hope we talk more about is like they're the bone, the ring, and the jewel. And they are capitalized.
Mm-hmm.
But then when he shows up, when Gray shows up and he says the relic, capital R, and the thing, capital T, it introduces this whole like otherness to it, right? Mm-hmm. Relic, thing, they're unknowable, they're weird. Thing is also like, what's that thing?
Yeah.
Look at that thing.
Something that doesn't, you can't describe.
Right. Yeah. And it gives this idea of like, oh yeah, these are totems of something that's squatting in your shrine here. Like you are sitting on top of some sort of power. And it's the first thing that he's kind of unlocking of her power. Like mm-hmm. this is the first step on her hero's journey, quote unquote, to like, she's crossed the threshold. Something has been broken.
Yeah.
Like a seal has been broken of knowledge that she's going to have to gather now because he has shattered the ritualistic and boring nature of these items. She knows they're magical. Like they're not boring necessarily, but they're boring to her.
Mundane.
They're familiar and mundane.
Yeah.
But now there's this exotic esotericism bestowed upon them because they're talked about in other lands and some weirdo is here and he knows about them.
Mm-hmm.
Like,
and he needs it for something.
The game is afoot. And I just thought that was a really cool way of kind of shattering that. It just like, I always talk about growing up Catholic on this show, but like we had the monstrum, right? The monstrum is this thing that you put a host in, a wafer in. And it's this big cross with like radiating bolts of light that stick out of it. And it's huge and heavy. And when you're 8 and they call it the monstrum, you're like, yeah, it's the monstrum, whatever. But then you read about it and it's capitalized in a book. You're like, oh, that's kind of weird. Like, why do we call it that? What is this whole thing? It's weird that we're putting Jesus's flesh in there and mm-hmm. praying to it. I think the same thing is happening to her. Like a mirror has been shattered. And she realizes that her magic that she is the caretaker for is part of a much larger world.
Yeah. And one really cool aspect of the first chapter of the story is we see her do a magical ritual. And we see her draw fire, elemental fire, from her own body.
Yep.
As part of it.
As a matter of course.
Yeah.
Right?
Like, this is just something that I can do as a priestess.
And she's like, I'll now draw the fire for you. She's just is like trying to get him out the door.
Yeah. Yeah. Here's the dog and pony show. Right. Like, is this what you came to see? Yeah. Are you not entertained?
Right.
And then we find out that Grey Wolf can also do some magic of his mm-hmm. own. And we see how powerful she seems. Like, she seems really powerful when her hands are aflame and she's drawing the living fire from her body and using it in this ritual. Like, to me, she seems like god tier, right? She's epic level. And we come to find out that this guy is at least on the same level as her, the interloper.
Yeah.
Sorry, I have now guided it for too long. I'm going to pass the talking stick.
No, I like how with her recognition of like his skill, it's the kind of thing where she says, like, she recognizes, oh no, I thought that I was the magic person, but this person is like either at my level or exceeding me, and it kind of changes the game. Like this story, these Winter Players, it's a couple characters bouncing back and forth and playing against one another, right? Like mm-hmm. we see these two, male and female, yin and yang, lots of contrasts staggered against one another, and it's a back and forth where one is leapfrogging the other.
Yeah.
Like that's the way it's structured, intentionally so, and I just think it's powerful, like, to see the way that Gray becomes magical. Like, he's just a barbarian, but then he's not.
Yeah,
He is clearly not just a barbarian. Dude's got all kinds of magic skills, and he's just like, back up. Like, he is able to operate on Oave's level.
Yeah, there's no reason for him to fear her necessarily, or at least he's equipped to be on the same level as her.
Yeah.
And I like that realization.
Yeah. And further to kind of move things a little bit further along, he seems more in tune to what the narrative of this whole story is, right? Like, he's plugged in once they get on the boats and the story's playing out there. He's like, no, wait, we've got to chase each other. You got to keep coming. Like, you're not going to drown. Get up. Get out of the water. Come on. Let's go. You can do this.
Right.
There's a story that he's trying to be a part of. He's a player on the stage.
Right. I think that's even... It furthers the unraveling of her because she doesn't know what's happening. She gets caught up in this game. She starts chasing this guy. She starts to realize that he's outclassing her. And then has to have this further realization that he's actually a pawn in this game, just like her. And he still knows more than she does. Like, her identity as the magic lady of her town is just getting eroded and she was the A+ student at a 50 person high school.
Uh-huh.
And now she's at the 50,000 person land grant university.
Right.
And is like realizing how tough this kind of stuff can be to keep excelling. But what's even worse is, like, this guy that she's chasing, it sort of comes to be that he's not magical. He's not that powerful. He's a thrall of a more powerful demon man. So it just seems like I loved that we've gone this whole way and just have unraveled this young woman. And now I'm kind of intrigued to see how she sews herself back up and what she's going to do if she goes back home
or not. And regains her own agency and like restructures things in such a way that she can be in charge. It seems like that's maybe where things are going to go. Hopefully, I don't know. I'm not Tanith Lee. I haven't read the whole story, so I don't know. What else is on the beer notes?
Well, this is a lot of
beer papers.
The deeper kind of like Tanith Lee publication history stuff. Okay. I guess the things that I had in the notebook about to talk about, we've already hit on the big magic. We've already hit on the male versus female, the yin and the yang kind of differentiation. I love how Tanith Lee is able to set these large chapters that are kind of set pieces. They're not necessarily piecemeal adventure stories the way that we might see in any number of like Liber, Fawford, and Mouser type entries or this or that, where it's the fix-up novel. Like, her stuff is both episodic and novel structure and intentionally so.
Mm-hmm.
Like, she just across this book excels at establishing very clear chapter breaks and an overarching narrative.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if you guys would agree with that.
I agree. I think there's a certain rhythm to her writing where there's a kind of a climax in each chapter.
Yep.
And so if you were to look at a graph of the story, you would see lots of peaks and then a dip and then a peak and a dip and a peak and a dip, and it would keep rising. Like, it would keep increasing. She turns up the heat and the temperature on the, was it Havor in Companions on the Road? And it seems like that is what's happening here too. Like, the stakes just keep getting higher.
Yep.
And in addition to that, like, the movement through geography helps to move the chapters along, like getting to these various villages. I know they don't all have their own chapter, but it does help to put set pieces together and get us where we're going and where we're not going. And the color part is also kind of cool. We start with two chapters that include the word gray before we end up with a red chapter, a white chapter, and a black chapter, all colors that are kind of contrasting and more vivid than gray. So it's like life is bleeding into her surroundings and into her as well.
Okay, so this is where you're not in Kansas anymore.
We're not in Kansas anymore.
You crossed the threshold. I like the notion of the hero's journey here. She's like, there's an underground thing that happens, right? Like the bone fragment is kept mm-hmm. underground, yep. and she has her call to adventure. Like, it's kind of out of order in a way, but
it's a little out of order. And I think traditionally she would be, isn't one of the early steps, like the goddess calls upon you.
Right.
Right.
Yeah. Like the call of the goddess. Yeah. Yeah,
she's the goddess.
But she is.
Yeah. So I think that explains maybe the out of order nature is like, you have to cut the goddess out of this, of her section and okay. give her her own chain of events.
That's cool. Yeah.
Good work, Tanith.
What do you think, Luke, about the color palette in the chapter headings going from gray to more vivid colors like red and blue?
It goes white, black, and red.
White, black, and yeah. red. Yeah, so which, contrasting.
Yeah, like you go from gray to white and black, which are now real colors contrasting with each other, then the introduction of red, and I know the later chapters have blue in the title, so it seems like we're moving into a world and a life that is more vivid than it was before.
Yeah, I think it's intentional. Like the artistry that Tanith Lee is exercising, and let me look at the notes. I think that it's slightly more sophisticated than what she did with Companions on the Road. So this story was written a year after Companions on the Road. So Companions on the Road was 1975, Winter Players was 76. And then in total, they were published together by St. Martin's Press in 77. So that's kind of the timeline of everything there. And I really do, I mentioned this earlier on with our first discussions of the Companions on the Road, that it's a clear narrative structure. And I really dig that classic formation. But here, she's even more thematic. I totally get the colors as stand-ins, and she's building a story and a statement. I think that she does it. I guess that's the short answer that I'm beating around here. Like, she is able to build clearer statements of good and bad and sides of the coin by the midpoint of the novel,
mm-hmm.
as opposed to just like Oave's gray and gray is gray. Right, you know
yeah.
what I mean?
Yeah,
like
yeah.
they coalesce on kind of a stance.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And the part where he really kind of blows her mind open is Red Ship, like the brightest color, really. They're on this gaudy ship that's got red sails and red wood, and she's going to have her mind blown by this guy who's like, no, you can walk on water.
right.
And I found that interesting that it's occurring on this like bright, flashy object with mm-hmm. the color yeah. of power.
And always before, it seems to me her magic was practical.
Mm-hmm.
And walking on water is kind of showy, right? Like you're doing it to send a message.
Right. And her magic has very much been like community oriented,
okay,
and,
yeah.
and less about anything for herself. Like it's a ritual that she goes through to help the people of her village or mm-hmm. of her area that pray to the shrine. And yeah, walking on water and the other stuff she ends up doing, pretty big time magic. That's when you're starting to become an actual witch, it seems like.
yeah, I think so. What else did you guys like about the story? Anything else that really struck your fancy here in these first four or so chapters?
I'm intrigued with the author being Tanith Lee, being a woman. The fact that at the outset, they call her a priestess, but it's pretty clear like she's a witch, right? I mean, she's got tinctures and potions and stuff, and people come and she does stuff for them. Like she lives yeah. in a cave, essentially.
Yeah.
So she's like a nature witch kind of thing. And there's a lot of respect there. But then, obviously, witch and witch powers aren't appreciated broadly across the land. Like, the further inland she goes, the more that can be turned against her
mm-hmm.
By Gray. And I found that interesting. I was trying to deduce if there was any sort of message there about witchcraft or womanhood or what have you. Like, what changes from the coast to the other side of the mountains where now her powers are something that could get her stoned to death, basically, by a bunch of superstitious people.
Culturally,
yeah.
right?
Yeah, what are the cultural differences? Maybe we'll find out more, but I thought that was an interesting contrast from her home to where Gray travels her through. How about you, Luke? Any other things?
So I guess the final thing that I would want to emphasize with the front half of the winter players is I think it's readily apparent at this point in time that this story is different than Companions on the Road in its structure. They're both episodic. They're both these high points and sort of lulls, and we've kind of talked through that, and Josh had a good description of how that plays out here just a little bit ago. Like, there's these very deft presentations of narrative where things have peaks and valleys and the story moves along. With Companions on the Road, from what I believe, I quickly looked at, like, I just flipped through the pages. I think it was like 10 or 11 chapters for that 100-page story. So a chapter every 10 pages, something like that. We mowed through the 50 pages of the front end of the winter players here, and we covered like 4 or 5 chapters. And quickly looking at the back of the book, I think there's 8 or 9 chapters total for this story that we'll get through. All of that is to say, this is a slightly longer paced story. Mm-hmm. Like, and it comes across as such. I think it's less characters. You know, the previous entry was 3 or 4 sword and sorcery bros on a road trip that were being hounded by death. You know, that's kind of the story that was painted there. Here, it's 1 or 2 characters, and specifically we're zoomed into Uave, and it's more of a character piece, but there's these really intense communiques back and forth, these moments of interaction. This is a more personal piece, and also much larger in scope in a lot of ways. It's cool. Like, this is a story that's both more intimate and also even more big world.
Mm-hmm.
Like, with the first story, Companions on the Road, you got an eye towards, like, the evil of the lands and the bad magus and his daughter and all of the, you know, all of the evil stuff that was going on. But this story, it's like, you don't get that. You get, like, cosmology almost. Mm-hmm. Or magic, just like, and then also this, like, very intimate exchange between man and woman, kind of on that level. And I just think that it's cool that this story is a bit slower paced and about twice as many words per chapter, but yet is going to ultimately fill about the same amount of space.
Mm-hmm.
How much does that make sense?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. How much of that do you think is an artifact of them kind of being in verses of each other? Companions on the Road, we're with the hunted party. With this one, we are with the hunter. So, like, that one was going to feel more nerve-wracking and quick because we're trying to get away from something. And, like, when you're in flight mode, right, it feels like every moment is your last. This one, we're the long walking predator following our quarry, so it's going to feel a little more drawn out.
I don't know. That's a good point. I hadn't thought about that actually, like at all. But that totally does make sense. And I think it's cool that Uave is the hunter, right? Like, as the woman and as the seafaring witch.
Right.
Like, it's weird that she's the one that's the pursuer.
I do like when they force time as well, seemingly, where they're like, they're connecting.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's so cool, man. Like, I think these two stories, I don't want to be hyperbolic just yet. I'll save that for next recording, but they are so very good and tell such cool stories. I'm excited for us to read the rest of it. What did you guys think about, what is it, Nitwus or Nitwus? What did we say his last
name? I said like Nitwus.
Nitwus. Yeah. What did you guys think about that character?
Creepy mother. Right? I mean, floating spirit that takes over a dead body, sort of hollow style, like the run of Green Arrow that Kevin Smith did, where Green Arrow is a quiver, right, that could be the host for a demon spirit if they don't get his real soul back into him. That was what I my nerd referencing for this part. But yeah, very sad that Gray is trying to resuscitate his dead mentor and accidentally necromancies a demon into his buddy, who then sort of takes over his life. So obviously got some potent power behind him. Very curious to see how we're going to get out of this, because he's turning people into wolves and sending people on quests across the land. Yeah, he's a bad mamma jamma.
We're in a tight spot.
We are in a tight spot. Awave's got to find a Hail Mary somewhere.
Man.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to seeing how things pan out, for sure.
What we're coming up on, though, is the final nail in the book, as well as our Tanith Lee season, right?
Yeah, this little mini season. I kind of love it whenever we are able to hit the ground running, hammer out, you know, a half dozen episodes or even less on a single topic. We get in, we get out, and we've got, I don't know, something that's on the order of like 4 or 6 hours worth of content about a topic. Like, you know, we did that with Dune, and Dune was, I think we did 4 episodes.
Yeah.
You know, so 6 or 8 hours on a book. Here we're going to be spending probably about the same amount of time, maybe a little bit less, on a shorter tome for sure.
Mm-hmm.
But there's more to unpack because it's 2 different stories and comparing and contrasting. I don't know. I just like that. I like you've got a long road trip or a full week to unpack a novel. Let's talk about it. So I'm excited that we're going to get through this.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so that's where we're going. We're going to do one more on Tanith Lee, and then I guess we'll be moving on into a little bit of spooky times.
Yeah, you can almost smell Kromtober in the air.
Mm, almost.
That PSL is straight up on my nose.
PSL, crunchy leaves,
I got
warm
my
blankets, cuddles on the couch.
Oh, pumpkin spice latte.
Pumpkin spice latte.
I thought it was some sort of beer. I was trying to figure out what sort of IPA you were referencing.
I'll do a PSL IPA all day. And I'll put on my scarf. It looks magical.
It does look magical.
It has jack-o'-lanterns on it.
The best of lanterns.
That's what I want my scarf to have on it. I'm going to go to the orchard.
I think you should have a blazer, like a full sports coat that's just jack-o'-lanterns.
With jack-o'-lantern and elbow patches. Pumpkins.
Yep. Yes, exactly.
Yeah.
I'm excited to round out this season. This has been a cool author to find. I appreciate you helping us to discover her. So I hope everybody that's listening has not gone to Abe Books and bought the books, because you don't want people hunting on your hunting grounds.
I gotta say, everybody that's listening to this is going to say, like, Tanith Lee's cool. And she is. She's the bee's knees. This is just like the tippity toes into the water. And we know that. But it's such a good little mini season. You can't not do this, right? Like, how big picture are both of these stories? And how sword and sorcery-ish are they? It's so good. So I'm excited that we're able to cover it. I'm looking forward to more. It's the kind of thing where it's like, man, yeah, we're going to get back to Fafhrd and Mauser. We're going to do Moorcock. We're going to get into some Elric. We're going to end up doing some more Carl Edward Wagner and some Kane. We're going to do some more Robert E. Howard. We're going to blah, 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 blah. There's so much. It's hard to have little bite sizes, but this honestly is a perfect little bite size. This is a little nougat, right? This is that perfect little,
it's the chocolate Reese's egg.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's a perfect perfect bite. It's a half sleeve of like Girl Scout Thin Mints. Like, it's just exactly what you want, right? Like, there's like 2 stories here. It's enough to leave you like satiated. And I'm excited. So we're going to do one more on Tanith Lee.
But until then, we remain faithfully yours, the Chromcast.
Mm-hmm.
Discoverable on several places on the internet.
Hold on. I've got a couple of emails.
My sign off.
Reel it in. We've got one from Drew Anderson who says, "Hey guys, love to say longtime listener, but I've only gotten into Conan, Solomon Kane, Cull, and the rest in the last couple of years. That said, I've been burning through the show archives and enjoying the heck out of it. I've also loved the recent shows on 2 of my favorite novels, Dracula and Frankenstein, and I'm eagerly anticipating the upcoming Strange Case of Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde episode." Clearly, this email was from a while back.
Nice.
But we're getting to it now, so sorry, Drew. To that end, I thought I'd offer a quick nerdy point in much the same vein as actually Frankenstein was the name of the doctor, not the monster. Every single one of us, me included, pronounces the name of the doctor as Jekyll, but Robert Louis Stevenson would have pronounced it as Jekyll. He was Scottish, and it's a Scottish name. Apparently, it was mispronounced in an early movie version, and we've been all saying it wrong ever since.
So, fair enough.
Yeah, fair. We screwed all that
up. Ba-bam.
He says he's curious to see where we land on the issue of whether Mr. Hyde actually exists at all, or if Mr. Hyde is a construct.
Mm-hmm.
So...
Get shut up to listen to that one.
Yeah.
None of us remember.
The horror that men do. He's a real dude.
I like the idea of the potion turning Jekyll into Hyde. Like actual transformation. But it's kind of like Fire Walk With Me, right? Like, is that... as it gets into spoilers, I guess, for Fire Walk With Me. But like, is that him or is that not him?
Mm-hmm.
So, and I'll just leave it there. But anyway, I like the idea that Hyde exists personally.
I'm trying it on with my Connery.
Jekyll.
I want Hyde to be a real evil presence.
Yeah. The demonic side that is released.
An impish, small figure who's emergent and...
He's me.
Does bad things.
Mm-hmm.
Somebody knocked that little girl down.
Somebody did. And it was Mr. Hyde.
Mm-hmm.
So thanks, Drew. We also have an email from Brent. I'm going to focus in on one section of it. It says, note of thanks for posting all the recordings of the presentations at this year's Howard Days. It's always been a dream of mine to attend it one year, but New Zealand is a little far away. And you know, life. I am amped if the Netflix series deal comes to fruition, but honestly, I'm most excited about what Titan Books will do with the franchise. I've already pre-ordered Blood of the Serpent, which is the upcoming S.M. Sterling Conan book. So we've got a pre-order, and my palms get a little sweaty when I think about it. It surprised me when they announced S.M. Sterling as the first cab off the rank, but when I sat back and thought about it, I thought it was a solid choice. You guys read anything by S.M. Sterling?
I have not, no.
I think I read So Dies the Fire, but it was a long okay. time ago.
Yeah,
he did a few alternate history type things, so yeah. I'm familiar with him.
But. Okay. I haven't read anything by him. So, thank you, Brent, for that email.
Yeah, hello to New Zealand.
That's New awesome. Zealand.
Yeah.
And then we have...
Come to Howard Days.
Yeah, come to Howard Days.
You will fit right in.
Yeah, we'll share some bourbon with you.
Yeah, man, get here and we'll... I don't know. If you can come from New Zealand, you'll drink a butt ton of bourbon. I guess that's the promise that I can make. There's enough to go around.
It's not a promise. It's a cromise.
It's a cromise. Wow. A 1.75 cromise. I think we had more bourbon than we had drinkers at the last Howard Days at the end.
That's true. Yeah. People kind of gave out on us, didn't they?
Yeah.
Then finally, we have a comment on Facebook from a new listener.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah. Jack Myers. Did you guys see this? It says, new to your podcast, and this book made for a great introduction for me, referring to... Companions on the Road. I thoroughly enjoyed the in-depth conversational style of the show. For me, it's always fun to listen to knowledgeable people talking about a subject they love. Thanks. He called us knowledgeable people.
Wow, we tricked you.
So thanks, Jack. We're glad you enjoyed it and hope you're still enjoying the episodes as they're coming out.
A trio of entomologists pretending to know English literature. So.
Yeah, we even talked about like etymology today.
That's true. That's true.
Anyway, yeah, sorry to reel you back in, but I think we're caught up now.
Excellent. Keep sending stuff in. You can do that through a variety of platforms. Where can they find us at,
Josh? We're on the web at thecromcast.blogspot.com. We're on Facebook and Twitter at thecromcast. Also Instagram, where Luke is going to be posting hot pictures of his Warhammer 40K.
My minis.
Yeah, his soldiers. His orc boys.
Soldiers.
and you can call us 859-429-CROM and leave a voicemail and email us thecromcast@gmail.com. Thanks to everybody who's reached out. We appreciate it.
Bye-bye. Bye-bye. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Bye-bye.
Hey, it's a podcast.
It's a podcast.
It's a spicy podcast.